Good afternoon. So again, my name is Kara Ryan. I'm a senior research analyst with the National Council of La Raza, and I'm excited to be here with you all today to talk about our recent project, doing some qualitative research with focus groups with Latinos to better inform how we can improve access to healthcare for this population. We did these focus groups in 2009, and since then, we had a little development called the Affordable Care Act. Healthcare reform was enacted in March of 2010, and we really see this as an important tool to be able to improve access to coverage and care for Latinos. But we should recognize that the law is while a tool, is not going to be a panacea, and there will still be Latinos left behind. So in my presentation, I'll talk about ways to maximize access for Latinos to get them access to coverage, and then also what we need to do to be able to come up with some strategies for folks who will fall through the cracks. Nothing to disclose. First, I'll start talking about the need, why we undertook this research, and move to the findings, what our research showed, and then I'll close by talking about some of the implications, how this research can inform policy moving forward. So unfortunately, Latinos have the highest rate of uninsurance out of any racial or ethnic group in the U.S. 1 in 3 Latinos is uninsured. That rate is even higher if you break it down by citizenship status. So about 20% of U.S.-born Latinos is uninsured, but nearly 60% of Latino non-citizens have no access to health coverage. Latinos make up about a third of all uninsured Americans. And the important thing to recognize, particularly when we're talking about access to healthcare, is that many Latinos hail from immigrant and mixed status families. So even though that 93% of Hispanic kids are citizens, more than 60% of them have at least one immigrant parent. And this has a lot of implications for access to health coverage. What this chart shows, and this is for all children of immigrants, not just Hispanics, but the green bars indicate immigrant children who face some of the highest rates of uninsurance. Nearly half of all immigrant kids with at least one undocumented parent is uninsured. But the blue bars represent citizens. So this shows that nearly a quarter of citizen kids with at least one undocumented parent has no access to health insurance. And this is despite the fact that they are highly likely to be eligible for a public health insurance program. So there are obviously 70% of Latinos who do have access to health coverage. So where are they getting their health insurance? Well, like most Americans, the plurality of Latinos are getting their coverage through employer-sponsored insurance, through their jobs, either their own or by covered through a family member's. But this rate is only 38%, is quite low, particularly when you compare it to blacks and whites. About 66% of whites get their coverage through employer-based insurance. The other avenue for private insurance is closed for most Americans, right? So only about 3.7% of Latinos have coverage through a direct purchase plan, where you go out and buy a plan directly from the insurer and are individually underwritten. It's very unaffordable for most folks, and it is also, up until recently, come with many exclusions on certain types of care based on your health conditions. So public coverage programs such as Medicaid and CHIP have been incredibly important to the Latino community. More than 1 in 4 Latinos nationwide have health insurance through either a Medicaid or a CHIP program. And fully half of all Latino children are covered by these programs. So I could probably talk all day, unfortunately, about access to healthcare and the barriers that Latino families face. And this is only talking about the coverage issue, right? As we heard from other panelists, there are many, many other factors that influence Latinos' health status. But coverage is often the most concrete and immediate barrier, and that's why we tend to focus very heavily on access to coverage. So with this information, we wanted to know more about the nuances and how Latinos are accessing both health coverage and ultimately their access to care. So even though our focus is on coverage, ultimately what we want is for people to be able to get the services that they need. So we undertook these focus groups with two questions in mind. How do we best facilitate access to coverage for Latinos? And what are the alternative sources of health care that we can investigate for Latinos who remain uninsured? And I actually won't spend much time on the methodology, but I did leave our copies of our conference release of our report in the back of the room, which you can peruse in more detail. But I do want to show you this map, which shows our focus group locations. We did 11 focus groups, two sets, in six locations. And I want to show this map because it indicates the percentage of the state population that is Latino. So the darker shades represent higher percentages. We wanted to talk to folks not in the traditional areas, which are the large established Latino populations, where states where folks usually think of when you talk about where Latinos live, so Texas, California, Illinois, New York. But we also wanted to look at the new growth states, where states that haven't had traditionally a high population of Latinos are experiencing new and rapid growth within the last decade. Often those states don't really have an infrastructure yet to integrate Latinos and new immigrants into their systems. So we did these focus groups in Portland, Oregon, Denver, Colorado, Chicago, Illinois, Fairfax, Virginia, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Miami, Florida. I won't go into these again in much detail, but the first set of focus groups in Miami and Denver wanted to look at the influence of both access to health insurance and citizenship separately. So we did a couple of permutations of those factors and looked at both insured and uninsured citizens and insured and uninsured non-citizens. The second group of focus groups was really taking a slightly more complex approach on looking at how families' access to coverage and care work. We did a heavy recruitment of mixed status families where there is a non-citizen parent with at least one U.S. citizen child, although we did integrate some fully citizen families into the research. We also wanted to look and see if the parents' uninsurance had any impact on an insured child's access to health care. We did one panel of fully insured families so we could compare and contrast experiences, and then one panel in Virginia on fully uninsured families. And our findings are roughly grouped into four different categories: access to health care, affordability, experience of families and children, and experiences of immigrant and mixed status families. And I won't read all these quotes to you, and I invite you again to check out the report to look at them in more detail. But I'm sure everybody in this room is shocked to find out that health coverage is the most fundamental factor when it comes to accessing health care, right? So, but we wanted to hear more from families, and especially this was clear from people who had one time had health insurance and now were uninsured and talked about the fact that, well, I used to go to the doctor all the time. When I lost my health coverage, I stopped going to checkups altogether. Health insurance was also a factor where participants sought care. The insured participants were much more likely to be going to private physicians' offices, for example, while the uninsured participants were being much more careful. They were being more reticent about visiting private physicians or hospitals and more likely to look out for community-based community health centers or community-based clinics that were either had offered a sliding scale or for fees, or they knew would somehow be a little bit more accessible to them. Access to Spanish-speaking providers was also a factor in where participants sought care, both for the insured and uninsured. But it's interesting because it's you're talking about further narrowing down those choices for the uninsured participants. So people are seeking out not only where their care can be the most affordable, but also where they feel more comfortable talking about their health. So a lot of times we heard from people, look, I'm perfectly comfortable speaking in English, but when I'm talking about my body and my medical care, I want to make sure I know exactly what that doctor is saying. So fewer sources of care for the uninsured folks means they waited longer to be able to access their care. Lots of people talked about, well, I've got to wait a week or 2 weeks where I know when I had insurance coverage, I could get in much quicker because I had more options. The private physicians will often not even take people who are uninsured. So in the meantime, people are using self-diagnosis and self-treatment in order to get by and treat some of their symptoms. People, home remedies were quite common. People sort of tried to gauge, okay, what did I do last time I had these symptoms? Oh, the doctor told me to do this. Let me see if I can recreate that on my own. And unfortunately, this poor access to health care, more so than coverage, the poor access to health care was really affecting people's physical but also their mental health. So people were waiting until their symptoms became quite severe and could not put off anymore that doctor visit for medical attention. And they were also really worried about it. People talked about the fact that they're worried that they weren't going to be around to raise their children and see them grow up because they did not have adequate access to health care. Again, a shocking finding on affordability. It's not affordable to get your health care. We heard this both from insured and uninsured patients alike. And this was particularly a problem for uninsured participants who had an illness or an injury and had a gigantic doctor bill that they were now struggling to pay off. But it was also an issue for insured patients who are just finding those co-pays and cost-sharing unaffordable. So people were saying, look, if you know the doctor gives me a prescription and it's less than $40, I might pick it up. If it's more, just can't do it right now. And here's an interesting finding, which is that both the insured and the uninsured participants who had relationships in their countries of origin were going back and seeking care there, whether that be checkups or whether that would be dental care or whether that would be treatment. And this was actually most common among U.S. citizens and our participants. And I think part of that is because of the issues around mobility. They were much more free to enter and come back in the country. Public programs, turning to the issues around families and children, public programs are critical for kids in these groups. This, of course, dovetails with the fact that 50% of Latino kids have coverage through Medicaid or CHIP. And the interesting thing here is that in the focus groups, for children that had a facilitator in their lives, either a caseworker, a promotora de salud, or other type of facilitator, those kids could get to either the pregnant mom or pretty much from birth enroll that child to have more seamless healthcare access. In other states, like in Oregon, we found an external trigger like needing to register your kid for immunizations was really when people were finding out about Medicaid or other type of public program. And that's really a good chunk of lost time that child could have been insured and may have had compromised access to care. Parents make decisions about their kids' health much differently than they do their own. So while our participants were willing to use a home remedy or over-the-counter medication, the second their child was exhibiting some sort of symptom, they would bring that child in. This was true even for the uninsured kids. People said, look, I know it's going to cost me an arm and a leg, and I don't care. And I just want to say that's an important asset that I think that we should be able to harness as we move forward. And then finally, turning to immigrant and mixed status families, again, not surprising to anyone in this room, non-citizen participants had an incredibly difficult time accessing both health coverage and care, and that comes in the form of both formal and informal barriers. There are restrictions to immigrants' access to health coverage programs, but also people are terrified of being able to access not only the coverage if their children are eligible, but also even going down to the doctor if there's not already a trust relationship was a huge barrier for this community. And then the final finding that I want to note is that the eligibility policies for public programs vary by state when it comes to immigrant coverage. And this was very confusing and very, very hard for parents to understand when they're mobile. So we had folks who would move from one state that offered coverage for legal immigrants, for example, using state-only dollars, move to another state and find out all of a sudden the waiting period applies and my kid's no longer covered. So this is something that was a challenge and has some implications moving forward around retention. Oh, I have one more here. And it's just to emphasize the fact that coverage often and access to care varied within the same family, but not just between parents and kids, right? Between siblings. And this was very much something that was troublesome for parents and affected the kids' access to care. So the child that immigrated with their parents may not be eligible for a coverage program. The kid who was born here is, and parents are struggling with what to do with that oldest child. Moving quickly through the policy implications, healthcare reform, I want to stress, is an important tool, and I will just briefly note the pieces of coverage, even though there's much more in the ACA than just the coverage provisions. Just noting that while legal immigrants will be able to access the exchanges, these new marketplace for coverage, the legal immigrant restrictions still stand in Medicaid, and in this law, as an overreaction to make sure that undocumented immigrants did not access these programs, the law includes an unprecedented exclusion on the private market, which is that undocumented immigrants cannot buy plans in the exchanges with their own money. So this is going to prove a huge challenge based on the pieces that I just mentioned about you could conceivably have a family with an undocumented parent married to a legal immigrant parent who has a citizen child, and everyone will have differing eligibility. So this is why we think community-based facilitators, such as caseworkers, such as promotores de salud, will be incredibly important for outreach. It should be culturally and linguistically competent, but also be prepared to deal with these complex eligibility and the confidentiality concerns. These enrollment barriers, and varying by state, which will still be in place in many cases, will have to be demystified for people. Also, I want to mention that even though these other forms of coverage are excluded, that there was no exclusion to the employer market, which is important because this is still a viable place for immigrants who are excluded in other systems to be able to get coverage and care. Two more slides. We need to support and expand and continued investment in community health centers and safety net providers. There's a lot of talk about now when everybody has insurance post-2014, there is a recognition that this is not going to be the case, right? You can even look at Massachusetts. What we're seeing there is Latinos and limited English proficient people are most likely to be left uninsured at the end of the day. Again, engaging in educational outreach, such as community health worker model, but being able to maybe think about creative ways to talk about not only prevention, but work with the fact that people are self-diagnosing and let them know when they need to get medical attention. We really need to assess the actual affordability of insured Americans once the law is fully implemented. And we need to improve screenings for emergency Medicaid and charity care for folks who are left behind. The law did extend eligibility for full scope Medicaid, which in turn should then extend eligibility for emergency Medicaid. So I'm happy to talk about that offline. And then, I went the wrong way. Sorry about that. And finally, just in talking about, we need to make sure that we promote child-only policies. This is something that insurers are talking about now, perhaps not offering this type of coverage anymore. This is going to be incredibly important going forward for Latino families. I will end there. I don't know why it's going back. There's my contact information, both for me and my colleague Jennifer Nandu, who wrote the report. Thank you for your attention, and I'm sorry that I went over.